Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host and tour guide, Yetta. Each weekday morning here on GCN, I strive to expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, and with military and economic schemes. If you'll listen, your eyes may be opened, and you may ultimately change your mind towards many of these human institutions. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, my mission will be to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines, all while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then, during our second hour, we will engage God on His terms by way of His one and only covenant and through His always dependable Torah teaching, so that with His guidance you will be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with Him. Our number for those who would like to question, criticize, or affirm anything that is said today is 877-300-7645. Normally, following a speech of the magnitude of a presidential inauguration, that's where we would turn our attention. But from what I can tell, there was nothing said during the that speech that was either memorable or that was even remotely new. Its tone for me was rather irritating. It sounded more like a preacher. It had the same voice inflections that you would have expected from Martin Luther King. It was as if the president wanted to be the national minister and chief, of course, minister for his own religion. It was full of hypocrisy. If there was any one theme in it, it was hypocrisy. Don't name call while he name calls. Don't be partisan while he is extraordinarily partisan. Work together when he is extraordinarily one-sided. It's my way or the highway. And all of the broken themes that have gotten America into the mess that it is in the world and domestically, economically and socially, were promoted during the speech. Just to say that it was a waste of breath would be too kind. Now, in the wake of the Israeli elections and the presidential inauguration, let's consider what Jeffrey Goldberg of The Atlantic wrote for Bloomberg just this week, because it reveals in stark terms what President Obama really thinks of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, as well as Israel itself. As The Telegraph's Middle East correspondent Robert Trait reports, the damning assessment of the Israeli Prime Minister, relayed by senior White House officials to an American journalist, Jeffrey Goldberg, is the most graphic sign yet of the toxic relationship between the two men who have clashed continually over the stalled Middle East peace process. Now, it is important for us to focus on this, because as we consider Obama's Islamic and secular humanist-inspired hatred for all things Israel, keep in mind that Israel is the catalyst for World War III. It is vastly more so than Czechoslovakia was for World War II. And this time, as a result of the attitudes like those displayed by America's current president and his predecessors are manifest, vastly more people will die this time around. Writing on the Bloomberg website, Goldberg, after meetings with White House staff, quoted Mr. Obama as repeatedly saying, quote, "Israel doesn't know what is in its own best interests." He said that in a response to a spate of recent announcements for thousands of new Jewish settler homes in East Jerusalem and the West Bank land, which Palestinians, put that in quotes, want for a future state. What this statement by Barack Obama displays is the same attitude that he has towards America. He thinks he is superior. This man who has never built a business, never even worked for a business, thinks that he knows better than do businesses what is best for the U.S. economy, which is built entirely on business. This is a man who has become extraordinarily wealthy based solely on his political fortunes, who despises the wealthy. And yet he thinks he knows what is best for them, which is to confiscate ever more of their money so that they can pay their fair share. His attitude towards Israel is quite similar. He views his view of everything as being right, and everyone else's as being both wrong and of no consequence. Israel doesn't know what its own best interests are. No, of course not. No, they wouldn't know that maybe it makes some sense for them to thwart the Islamic aggression that seeks to destroy the country. No, they would have no way of knowing that giving up the West Bank as they were forced to give up Gaza will make Israel indefensible. Yeah, Israel would have no way of knowing that building homes for people is a superior choice to allowing Muslims to cower the nation by shooting off rockets indiscriminately at population centers. This is a quote now from Barack Hussein Obama, as reported by Goldberg. If Israel, a small state in an inhospitable region, becomes more of a pariah, one that alienates even the affections of the U.S., it won't survive. I pause there because I want you to think about that. Obama is convinced that the survival of Israel is based solely on its willingness to engender the affections of the United States, which he sees as himself. Israel's survival is based upon them pleasing Obama. This man views himself as God. Israel's survival is based entirely upon Yahweh's love for his land and for his people. Israel's destruction is largely caused by the United States' willingness to sell weapons to Israel's enemies, to Egypt, to supply weapons to Libya, to supply weapons to Jordan, to Syria, to Iraq, and to Saudi Arabia, to Qatar. Americans' weapon trade, which goes disproportionately in favor of Muslims who wish to destroy Israel, is the greatest threat to Israel today. The United States forcing Israel to give up Gaza was a grave threat to Israel. The affections that Obama has for Israel, which are zero, have nothing to do with that nation's survival. This man positions himself as if he were God. The President of the United States would go on to say, Iran poses a short-term threat to Israel's survival. Israel's own behavior poses a long-term one. Can you imagine a man more out of touch with reality than the President of the United States? A man that the majority of Americans elected. So we can't just blame him. We must blame ourselves. Now, while I am convinced that Iran will not deploy its nuclear weapons in Israel because God has provided no insights in terms of Israel being devastated by atomic weapons in the last days, although he has provided considerable insight of atomic warfare devastating much of the earth in the last days. Israel is not one of those places that is named to have been devastated by atomic weapons. So I think that the atomic weapons that Iran is developing will be deployed, but they will be deployed in places like the United States. Iran poses a long-term threat to the world's survival, particularly to the United States' survival. And the United States has done everything it could possibly do to empower Iran, because the United States invaded Iraq and gave Iraq to Iran, eliminating the country's only enemy and empowering it not only to control Iraq, but also Syria and Lebanon, and to be the primary influence now with Hamas. The United States caused that problem. The reason that Israel is threatened by Iran is because of what the United States has done. And an atomic attack is not a short-term problem. As it relates to its own behavior, there are many things that Israel does that are hostile to its own success. None of those would be in the president's list that he would be opining about. The things that Israel does that are hostile to its own interests is it tolerates Muslims. It ought not. They're calling for its destruction. It refers to a mythical people as Palestinians. It ought not, because it plays into the myth. It does not claim as its own lands that it seized after the Muslims tried to wipe the country out, as every other country on earth would have done, as they should have done. Israel is unwilling to openly expose and condemn Islam, its mortal enemy. Something Israel, of all nations, must do. And of course, Israel has not yet returned to Yahweh. They have not yet come to renew and embrace the covenant. All things that they must do and will do over time. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. For those who would like to engage in this conversation, if you want to disagree with the tone that I am taking, feel free to do so. That number is 877-300-7645. It is also interesting that in his discussion with the White House and its staff, Goldberg was told that Obama specifically called the Israeli Prime Minister a political coward. He said he was incapable of making concessions to the Palestinians because he has become captive to the Jewish settler lobby. Now, that's pretty amazing that the idiot that occupies the White House would call the Israeli Prime Minister a political coward. This is the man of, if you were to take a survey of politicians, most of whom are scum around the world, the man with the most backbone, the man most willing to stand up for the truth, is Benjamin Netanyahu. Now, I'm not a fan of Mr. Netanyahu. I'm not a fan of Israeli politics. If I were in Israel, I would take the same approach that I take here in America, which is to condemn all political parties. Not a fan of politics. God's not a fan of politics. God doesn't have a voting interest in the Israeli elections. But when an American politician calls Netanyahu a political coward, you just find how estranged Barack Hussein Obama is from the truth. He is one of the few people that when politicians lie, like the President of the United States did in his promotion of a Palestinian state, Benjamin Netanyahu came back with an hour speech using evidence and reason that demonstrate there is no such thing as a Palestinian, that Yahweh gave the land to the Jewish people, and that there was no historical or logical basis for a trade of land for peace, that it was a completely bankrupt concept based upon the nature of Islam. And so he is among the few politicians the world over that will actually use evidence and reason and will bow his back and say, no, I'm not going to allow these people to destroy my country, to wipe my people off the face of the earth. Mr. Obama knows there's no such thing as a Palestinian. He has an education. He knows that it isn't Benjamin Netanyahu's job to appease the very people that want to destroy his country and murder all of his people. And when it comes to being a supporter of those who wish to build homes and live in the land is a good thing, not a bad thing. This article continues, President Obama's contempt for Netanyahu is well known, as he has amply displayed in private meetings with the French president, Nicolas Sarkozy, back at the G20 summit in November of 2011, when Sarkozy was still president of France. Now we have a communist, where he reportedly told his French counterpart in reference to the Israeli prime minister, yeah, you're fed up with him, but I have to deal with him every day. Despises the man. Obama refused to meet with Netanyahu when he visited the United States in September of last year, but finding time on this during the same period to appear on David Letterman's show. The reason that this is important is that in the Islamic Middle East, there is only one sane nation. There's only one civil nation. There's only one nation that the rule of law prevails, where there is freedom of movement, where there is freedom of education, where there is economic opportunity, where there is a decent life for the people, only one nation that's not enraged to destroy everything. There's only one place that isn't a living hellhole in the entirety of the Islamic Middle East, and that's Israel. And not to despise that president, but yet embrace the others, is reprehensible. It shows that this president is morally bankrupt. He is heavily influenced by his Islamic upbringing. The Quran is the most anti-Semitic book ever written. It is far worse than Hitler's Mein Kampf. And so, in his upbringing, Muhammad's words influenced Barack Hussein Obama, and he despises Israel. He wants Israel destroyed. That's the only rational conclusion that can be drawn from his actions, from his words, from his willingness to support the Muslims that wish to destroy God's promised land. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yana. I'm going to turn our attention now to the elections at, in Israel itself, keeping in mind that the fate of Israel, the terrorist attacks upon Israel, the Islamic rants against Israel, are all going to shape our future, are going to shade the events of the next 20 years more than anything else. Yes, America's cratered economy is going to have an influence. America's decline as a nation and its indebtedness will have an influence. America's military and its tendency to use it will have an influence. The faltering nature of European economics will have an influence. The rise of fundamentalist Islam, the Islamic Reformation that's taking place, and the wars and killings that are related to it will have even a larger influence. But the greatest influence on the next 20 years, the canary in the mine shaft, is Israel. So let's take a moment and let's consider the elections that are taking place in Israel today. But before we do, we have Jason calling in from Toronto. Hello, Jason. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on everything you're talking about today, but I wanted to give sort of a different perspective, something that's sort of come to my attention recently. And
okay,
you know, you look at Psalm 2, and really what we're witnessing, although it is disastrous, it's I look at it good in a way, in that what's happening is the nations, including the United States, they have to have their time and then finish. Like the Torah and the nation of Israel, they will be established. And one thing about Psalm 2 is that it talks about sitting at the right hand of Yah until its enemies are his footstool.
Yes.
And I sort of see you.
Yeah,
there's an inevitability to it. I mean, if you're
right,
patriotic, you're holding on to a sinking ship, and there's an inevitability to what's happening. And the good news is that the earth is going to see the most, you know, magnificent time.
Yeah,
it's seen in a long, long time,
and also the most horrific.
The necessity is that the corruptions and the stench of religion and politics and all that have to come down. Mm-hmm. And so us people need to know that we have to remind ourselves of not to get too caught up in the despair of the crumbling of Babylon, because what's coming after is a wonderful prospect.
Yeah, let me agree with you and challenge you on your most recent statement, if I might.
Okay.
One of the things that strikes me about it is that from a favorable perspective, is that just as we are conducting this show by first examining the news, the failed human institutions of politics and religion, of militarism and our economic schemes, and how almost every human institution is untrustworthy and leading people astray, being counterproductive. And then we transition into the Book of Answers, into Yah's Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and we consider the majesty of his teaching to us. That contrast is extraordinary. But that's the exact same contrast that you're speaking of. Things are going to get on this earth horribly bad. They are horribly bad. They're going to get far worse prior to the most wonderful thing that's ever going to happen to this planet, the return of Yahweh and his restoration of our planet to the conditions experienced from the Garden of Eden. So just as we make that contrast in this program, that is the very contrast that we're going to experience over the next 20 years. Now, there's also something I'd like to say that is particularly astute of you referencing the second psalm, if I may, Jason. God's Torah is a book of answers. And so what God is looking for us to do is ask questions that we will find the answer to in his Torah. When God asks us questions, that's not a good thing. There are not a lot of questions that God poses in his Torah, Prophets, and Psalms that are good. And this psalm begins with a question. It says, why are the nations in uproar? And why are the peoples devising a vain thing? Why are we acting so arrogantly? Why are we acting in a way that is so counterproductive? Why are we so enraged as nations? The kings of the earth, they take their stands. The rulers, they take their counsel, all against Yahweh and all against His anointed, the one who is set apart to serve. Let us tear their fetters apart and cast away their binding cords from us. What are the fetters? The fetters are of political and military fetters. What are the binding cords? The binding cords are the basis of religion, which means to rebind. Religion is based on the Latin word, to bind. Tear ourselves away from their religion. So this is exactly what we were talking about in the opening of the program. You're right. God told us this is exactly what's going to happen. He's questioning us and said, why in the world are you guys doing this? It is stupid. And I think that is all perfect as a comparison. Now, if I might just challenge one thing you said, Jason. I do think it's important for us to be troubled when our president does such things, when he takes such a hostile view towards Israel. And I think it's important to do what God did in the second Psalm, which is to lash out and expose and condemn the human endeavors, religious and political endeavors. Because when we do so, we have a chance of awakening some individuals and causing them to question their allegiance to patriotism. As you said, you know, if you're a patriot, all you do is clinging to the side that is opposed to God. You're clinging to that which is in opposition to God. And to the degree that we should say, yeah, you're right, this is inevitable, it is what's going to happen. God has seen our future, has noted that we're doing all of these horrible things. That's why he's asking us the question, why are you doing them? I mean, this is so counterproductive. Are you that ignorant? Are you that stupid? And I dare say we are. And when I say ignorant and stupid, God articulated what we ought to do that was in our best interest, and we're ignoring that and opposing it. And he said, if you do these things, they're counterproductive, they're going to harm you. And yet, you claim as a people to be listening to me, to be aligned with me, and yet you're doing exactly what I encouraged you not to do. What's wrong with you?
Yeah. I would say that just for Yah's people that I think there will come a point where we can't. When you say we, we can't really even consider ourselves in association with people that are.
You're right.
And patriotic.
Right.
All I wanted to point out was that what we're seeing is...
And I was using we there just as humanity.
Yeah, I know. But we will eventually, we have to walk away from the United States.
Of course.
And I would just say that, just one thing I wanted to point out for the people mm-hmm. sitting there that know Yah, is that, you know, what we're seeing, we're witnessing the beginning of the end of the madness.
Yes, we are.
And that's a good thing.
That's a good thing. Now, that's a bad thing also in that madness doesn't go out with a whimper. It is the beginning of the end.
It's going to get scary. And
yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's going to get much worse. And it's attitudes like that expressed by the President of the United States that are the reason it's going to get much worse. And there's only one moral and rational thing to do as it relates to one's dealings with the Middle East, which is the catalyst for the next world war. And that is to embrace and encourage Israel and to try to dissuade the rage and violence that is and really just hellish conditions that exist throughout the Islamic world. And yet the President of the United States, on behalf of America, is doing exactly the opposite.
Yeah.
You know, we yes, this is going to happen, but because God made it very clear, you know, he said, I will bless those who bless the land of the covenant. He's speaking both of the land and of the covenant when he's speaking of Abraham, that I will bless those that bless thee, and I will trifle with those who curse thee. And that's what America is now doing. It's cursing Israel. And when God views this concept of trifling with, it can be translated curse, although I don't think it's God so much intervening to harm America. I just think that God is saying that he has no interest in America. He certainly isn't going to protect the vast preponderance of Americans, and that the consequence of the actions of opposing Israel are going to bring harm to this country. I mean, I think that the exact same thing that happened, in fact worse, when Neville Chamberlain decided that it would be wise to give up the high ground of Czechoslovakia, a country that he did not control and had no rights to, and gave it to the Nazis, which served as the catalyst for World War II. America's desire to give the high ground of Judea and Samaria to the Muslims is going to cause a war that is going to have suicidal consequences for the very nations that propose this trade. I'm Yadin's Shattering Myths. Please stay with us, Jason. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Diana. We're here with talking with Jason, calling in from Toronto, having a perspective on the deteriorating attitude towards all things Yahweh, towards not only his Torah teaching, but towards his promised land. When, Jason, you think about the President of the United States' attitude when he says that Benjamin Netanyahu, rather than aligning himself with Jews, Yehudim, who are interested in building homes and raising their families in the promised land, the land that Yahweh gave them, that he instead should be giving that land to Muslims, to those who were expressly estranged from the covenant. You know, when Abraham asked Yahweh if Ishmael could participate in the covenant, you know what God said, don't you, Jason?
Yeah, sorry. I was lost in thought there for a second. I apologize.
Okay, well, Abraham asked Yahweh if Ishmael, and Ishmael is the person credited as being the patriarch of Islam. And so now that the President of the United States wants to have the President of Israel give the land that Yahweh promised to the children of the covenant to the descendants of Ishmael, I recall Abraham asking God if that would be okay. Could Ishmael inherit your covenant? And God said, absolutely not. Yeah, absolutely not.
Yeah.
And so by telling the Israeli prime minister that by the United States president telling the American prime minister that Jews should not be allowed to build homes in Jerusalem, but that that land should be given to Muslims. Is he not taking a position that is directly opposed to Yahweh?
Yeah, then I would say, like, if your objective is not a relationship with Yah, walking in the Torah, whatnot, that's the inevitable thing that's going to happen. You're going to perpetuate something that opposes it. I think
correct.
It's just it's inevitable.
Correct. I agree with you. I think that's why Christians are so lost, is that they are disassociated from the Torah, and the Torah is the only antidote for religious and political oppression, religious and political poison.
There's so many references to the Torah in the future, too, to consider it, you know, inconsequential or irrelevant. You really have to ignore a lot of the evidence.
Let me just make that point to reference it. If we go over into the next hour, so be it. I do want to hear your next point. One of the things that I found interesting in writing An Introduction to God is that one of the longest sections of that book happened to be references to the Torah in the prophets, and that most of the references to the Torah in the prophets spoke of the Torah's role in our future. And so if the Torah has the seminal role in our future, how in the world can the Torah have been annulled in our past? And most especially on this, the only thing that Christians, at least out of context, can cling to and mistranslate it is the notion that the covenant will be renewed. And yet, in the very discussion in Yirmiyahu 31, where it speaks of the renewal of the covenant, it says that the basis of that renewal is going to be with God himself writing his Torah inside of us. And so this notion that the Torah has been annulled when it plays the most important role in our future, you just got to be stupid. You just have to be completely ignorant and irrational to hold that position, which is why it's a religious position, not a logical position.
When you're clinging to the to something that is contrary to Torah, Paul, or, you know, some form of politics or religion, you do have to sort of come to irrational conclusions.
Yes.
You have to ignore evidence to some degree or another to hold your position.
Yeah, we'll return to that, and stay with us over the break, Jason, and we'll continue this conversation. This is Chattering Mist. I am your host, Yada.
For health and vitality for you, your family, and friends, get the Healthy Start Pack from Youngevity, as recommended by registered pharmacist Ben.